Welcome to the Engineer-ish, or as we like to say, Engineer minus the ish.
Wait, we taking the ish out, or are we putting the ish in?
It's a one-way street, baby. It's going all in.
Of course, still the most unique math problem we've been puzzled by, solved, and certainly revisited throughout our journey as engineers. I'm Tori.
And it's your boy, Drew.
Welcome, welcome, welcome
to the Engineer
Ish.
The Engineer Ish now in session.
We have a very special episode this week with a special guest, and we don't want to belabor, so we're going to hop right in. What you say, Drew?
All right, all right. I am really, really excited today to invite a very special guest to join us on the podcast. Tori and I have had the opportunity just in doing this podcast to connect with a lot of different people from a lot of different places with a lot of different backgrounds. And our guest today is actually one of our listeners who we've actually had the opportunity to build a little bit of a relationship with. And we just fell in love with his story so much that we had to invite him out, bring him on the podcast, and give him an opportunity to share not only his background, but also his story about how he's gotten to where he is. So please put your hands together and help me bring to the podcast our man, Larry Griffin.
Hey, Larry, welcome, welcome, welcome.
Thank you, Drew and Tori. Glad to be here. I'm loving it. Thank you.
We are glad to have you, man. We are glad to have you.
And as we say, what's happening?
What's happening?
And one of the things that Drew forgot to mention, but it's important to know. So if you guys listen, you may know that his name is Larry Griffin. And he was actually one of our picks of the week. So
yeah,
we're honored to have one of our picks of the week and listeners.
The VIP guest
today.
I said, I'm honored to be sharing the same microphone with you too. So thank you very much. Thank you.
Great. So Larry, could you start off by giving us a little elevator intro or elevator pitch and just tell the listeners a little bit about who you are so they can know a little bit about the guest that is gracing their ears today.
Oh, thank you. Actually, I came born and raised. So I was born in Philadelphia, raised in North Carolina, and went to college for a little while. I'll give you guys the short. Don't want to make this too long. But in my path, I went went to college for a couple of years. Decided I wanted to switch majors, didn't really know what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
Ended up 8 years in the Marine Corps, got out, got a job, worked a couple of little jobs here and there. I had a family at the time, worked a few little jobs, and then got into the industrial sector as an apprentice electrician. Worked my way up to journeyman status, you know, within a couple of years, doing a lot for work, and then I remembered I had GI Bill money to use. So
that GI money.
Oh yeah. Yes. Yes. I greatly always encourage that, to use that. And I use that money to go back to school, and I chose engineering. The first time I went to college, it was computer programming. That's what I thought I wanted. And that was, and I'm gonna date myself, that was in the 84. I'll just go ahead and say it.
1984. All right.
So now you fast forward to 2006, 2008, and I switched to an engineering major because I was in the plants and I knew I wanted more. So from there, I became a chemical engineer.
Oh, nice. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Lee.
No, that's okay. That's okay. So I chose chemical because of the, I was interested in the process.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got everything clinking and clanking around you.
Mm-hmm.
And I was interested in, why is this doing this? Why is this doing that? I mean, I was just surrounded by all of this. You know, I was immersed in the middle of it. So that's what drew me towards the petrochemical engineering degree.
Nice. I will say, yes. I know very little about petrochemical engineer. So I'm excited to be able to learn a lot more about what it is that you do, because I mean, we may have some listeners that are maybe interested in going to that sector and just being able to work in that field like yourself. And I have to say thank you for your service first and foremost. And
absolutely.
I think it's awesome that you transitioned from Marine Corps to engineer. That's unique.
Thank you. And you're welcome. And actually that transition, so my job in the Marine Corps, I was a military policeman.
Mr. Officer.
I went from computer programming to being a cop. Actually, 6 years of that, I was a military policeman. And then 2 years, I was a marksmanship instructor.
Okay.
And then I could get into engineering. So I kind of did a in and out, out and in kind of thing. So
what I like about that you just kind of shared in your opening that I think fits really well, like for not only like what we talk about in the podcast, but really in general is that curiosity, right? Mm-hmm. You wanted to know kind of how and why things do what they do. And I think that curiosity drives, at least I know for myself, like it drives me in a lot of different ways, because I'll see something or I'll experience something and my mind just kind of gets to thinking like, man, like where did that come from? Why is such and such like that? And you start digging and figuring stuff out, and you know, next thing you know, you're an engineer.
right. Exactly. And as engineers, I mean, I think that's how we're born. That's how we're geared.
Yeah.
We don't stop learning. We're continually learning and we're reaching out and we want to know why and stuff. I've got friends and coworkers who started out doing things like taking apart the TV, mm-hmm. the parents' TV, you know.
Sounds like Drew.
Things like that. Matter of fact, I was, 10, 11 years old, and built a crystal radio. My dad bought me a crystal radio kit, and that was one of my first electronics things that I put together.
I don't even know what that is. Do you say a crystal radio kit?
Crystal radio, yes.
Like Drew, do you know what that is?
I'm not familiar with the crystal radio kit, but I'm assuming. Go ahead, Larry.
Yeah. So to keep the podcast short, we might talk about that another day. We'll talk about that some other time. So it's back in the transistor age.
That's what I was thinking. Like a transistor radio type of deal. Yeah.
Right.
All right. Well, thank you for your elevator intro. Now you guys may be familiar with our A Day in the Life episode. So we've had one of those episodes so far.
Yeah.
And you may remember Dr. Jerika Brown graced us for our first and initial A Day in the Life episode. So Larry is our second guest. And if you guys remember, the task for our guest was to journal. Mm-hmm. The whole purpose of this was to give everyone an idea of what a day in the life of this person looked like in their career as an engineer based on what it is that they actually do without them, you know, sugarcoating it, like telling us some of the difficulties they go through and then really how they were able to like move through some of those difficulties. So did you want to say anything else about a day in the life, Drew? Just a little bit about
I'll add just a tad bit. You know, last time, you know, Jerika did a wonderful job of taking us into the world of academia, right?
Yeah.
And Larry's journey is very, very different. But I also think that we're going to see some of the commonalities just between engineers in general and how they both approach issues, resolve issues, and how they go throughout their day and some of the things that they may face. While the issues themselves or the challenges themselves may be different, the way that they tend to move through those issues, there's likely going to be some similarities there. So for those of you out there that are thinking about, you know, even pursuing just engineering in general, really listen in and kind of just take note of some of the things that you're hearing in terms of how they approach issues and kind of their mindset in which they are able to kind of get over certain obstacles that they're faced with.
Right. Yeah. Those are all good points. So obviously, Larry, you're the man of the hour. We had you keep a journal. So start by telling us how it felt to journal some of your thoughts throughout the week pertaining to work. What did that feel like for you?
Felt like I was writing a novel. and it took me back to school, you know, right? Like as if I was writing an essay or a paper. So I kind of had that a little bit of that anxiety.
But
it was actually fun. It was actually fun because I never really think about what I do.
Mm-hmm.
you know, I just do it. You show up to work and you just do what you do. And it's like, wow, did I really do that? And so it was good. It was a nice assignment. It really was.
Good.
And speaking of being in school, as you guys know, I'm a traditional, well, I guess a non-traditional student. You know, I was an older student. So that's one of the first challenges.
Yeah. So I want you to talk about that just a little bit, kind of as we transition here into the day in the life. Mm-hmm. If you could tell us kind of a little bit about like how you became an engineer. Obviously, you gave us a little bit of that background. Right. But if you could talk about that a little bit more, and then kind of really kind of describe kind of what like kind of an overview of what you do in your career before we kind of go into what your day is actually like.
Okay. And then also one thing, I want to add one thing. How old were you? I would like to know, or you to share, how old were you when you started college? Because that's unique too, like being able to throw yourself back in the college world when you're a little bit mm-hmm. older. So just if you could share that as well.
Right. So to answer that question, I was 40, about 39, 40 years old.
Oh, okay.
Right. Yeah. So
that's good stuff right there.
Yeah.
And it was kind of the challenge was, you know, I was in class with younger people like you guys,
mm-hmm.
and much different from the first time around. So my note taking was different. I actually used a pen and notebook, whereas everybody else was taking notes on iPads and things like that. so I stayed.
Look at this guy with his pad and paper. What's he doing?
Exactly. And I stayed with old school, getting a job and first interviews. Because it's been a while since I had interviewed it. Very, very challenging.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't really prepared for it, but it had other advantages too. I was more disciplined and more focused.
Mm-hmm.
When I did it. That leans into, because that's what I was trying to segue into, it leans into my everyday. As far as waking up early, mm-hmm. being on time for work, all of that. Those were things that the military instilled in me. And so it just what carries in. But my normal day, what I do is I'm a contractor. So mm-hmm. I get hired by different firms and different contract companies to assist big companies, which I'll call the client.
Mm-hmm.
My clients have been in the petrochem, so you can just go ahead and imagine the big four oil companies. I've done paper mills, I've done a pharmaceutical, and I've done a food service.
Wow. Okay.
Nice variety.
Yeah.
And what I do is I help them start up. So I come in like in the last half of the project. I've only done two projects from the cradle, from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And seen it all the way to the end. But most of them, I come in at the end and I'm, it's like a baseball reference. I come in the last inning and finish out
the closer.
Out the game. I'm the closer. Right?
Yeah.
and it's not just me. I'm part of a team. So I don't want to make it sound like it's just me doing it. Part of a team, and the teams have ranged from being 10, 30, super large project, 50 of us.
Wow.
Okay.
And that's just in the, so I lean towards the instrumentation and electrical.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where in the controls, automation. So that's just for that department. And my normal day, because I'll have to take this, each plant, each job is different. Yeah, that's mm-hmm. kind of a challenge. I sort of like that because you're going in new with each job you go to. There's a different challenge.
Yeah.
Right.
Challenge,
yeah.
But the schedule changes. I won't call it a challenge. I'll say the schedule changes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the start time might be different. You're in a different city, different state, maybe not even a city. Some places are remote. Paper mills are usually out in the middle of nowhere. With different people, the teams are different. So, I like that. I like that variety.
Now, on average, Larry, how many projects do you typically work on per year? Like, what is the length of, like, what is the, I guess, the average length of your contracts?
Average lengths. The industry is sort of, I've been lucky. I've been getting some of that in the last thing, like 6 months or so.
Okay, mm-hmm. Not bad.
The one I'm on now is going on 8 months. Some of them are just a few weeks.
Okay. Like, so
when I come in, they just need me for a couple of weeks. You know, like size system with and actually cranking it up. There's different things electronically and electrically that may or may not work. So I guess maybe I should back up how the industrial process goes. So a particular unit, a part of a plant is designed by, you have a design team, a design mm-hmm. team. Mm-hmm. So they put it together, set everything up, then the construction phase starts, steel, mechanical, all that stuff, and then the electrical comes in, and then once the electrical is complete or near complete, that's when somebody like me gets called in,
mm-hmm.
and we kind of help do that push and help any questions the foreman might have, because, the drawing isn't the same as what it is in real life.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's because, the person designed it, he's in a cubicle somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
how it is.
And putting it together. So I'm the field guy. And not all of the, electricians, they might not understand the drawings. There's different skill levels on their end. And
absolutely.
Things like that. So, so that's where I'm at with that. My typical day.
I want to paint this picture just a little bit, so like everybody can kind of stay with us as we go through this day, right?
Yeah.
So by all means, if I'm off base, okay, bring me back, right? So how I picture it in my head, right, everybody's have seen one of these factories somewhere, right? You've driven by it on a highway, something, you've seen it somewhere. Mm-hmm. Right. And it's this huge, massive thing that's producing stuff. We don't know what the stuff is, but we see the stacks. We know it's producing stuff. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. And somebody or somebody's company has paid millions of dollars for somebody to build this particular facility to produce mm-hmm. all of this stuff. Right.
Right.
And so when they go through that process of building everything up, like, as all of us have probably noticed, that anything that you build, when you go to actually operate it, it never quite works exactly right the first time. There's usually some trial and error to try to figure out how that works. And within these factories, they actually have these feedback systems so that they can figure out, well, which part of the system is actually not working correctly. Because mm-hmm. it's such a large system, like everything has to flow in the right way and pass it on to the next step. And so these instruments help to measure that everything is correct at each part of the process. And so when something gets mm-hmm. off, that actually could cause bigger problems. So you want to be able to notice like when those things are off so that they can be fixed, so that it doesn't become $1 million problem. It's just right. $1,000 problem. We can deal with those, right?
Right. Yes.
So that's really kind of where you sit at with your work, is making sure that those instruments and that feedback process mm-hmm. is working properly, so that when there's an issue, the right people get notified and they can actually address the issue before it becomes something really, really big.
Exactly. Yes, Drew. Yeah, you nailed it. Sometimes in the instrumentation world, we like to compare it to a car.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When you're driving your car, if you look at the gauges on your dash, think of a level transmitter as your gas gauge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Flow. You can almost say that's like your speedometer, mm-hmm. the rate mm-hmm. of speed, things like that. So
yep.
you gauge temperature, because you do have a temperature gauge. So oil pressure gauges. So just think of that dashboard, and that dashboard is, like you say, that's your feedback.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
okay.
So we like to look at it like that a lot of times. And and you're right. When you start it up, some things might not work because they put it together and everything's dry, and they'll tend to, it might take like 2,000, 3,000. I've been on projects as many as 12,000 workers have takes to put this thing together.
Yeah.
A lot of teamwork.
Right. A lot of teamwork, a lot of different crafts. So when they're ready to start it up, all of those guys get to leave. And it's just me, the client, you know, the team I'm on, the client, and it's just us.
Yeah.
So when we start up, when we hit the switch to crank it up, yeah, there's only a few people around.
Everybody's holding their breath.
Everybody's holding their breath.
Exactly. And I'm sure.
And the two most dangerous times in the plant is the startup and the shutdown.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because, that makes sense.
Right, because you're dealing with chemical reactions, and they, sometimes the atoms and stuff, they don't like to play well together if the conditions aren't right.
Yeah, and I'm sure it's safe to say that you worked on many multi-million dollar projects. I'm assuming like these are some really expensive projects that you're, that you are a part of. And I think a lot of times, Drew and I, we talk often about teamwork as engineers. Mm-hmm. We're working on teams, whether it's in college, and it doesn't just stop at college. When we go to the workplace, that's when I feel like it really gets amplified, the idea of working with cross-functional teams. So we'll be able to hear throughout Larry's journaling and his journey through his week, how he's worked with different teams. I'm excited to hear about some of the crucial conversations he's had to have and maybe some difficulties along the way. So,
some of those I'm going to have to filter because this is a radio show.
Try not to throw many F-bombs. We'll allow you to throw a few curse words.
I will make this. Anybody who follows me on social media, they know.
Well, Larry, could you begin to talk us through your journal entries just pretty briefly, if you could give us some highlights of each day, and we'll probably, you know, cut in to ask you questions as you're going. So just
absolutely
don't mind us. We will.
So generally, you know, it starts 6-7 o'clock in the morning, and I usually have a meeting at that time, you know, show up, have a meeting. And in this meeting, generally it's the client and my team members, we sit down and look at the skyline. Some places call it a skyline. It's actually a look ahead. And it's a look ahead of the daily, of, you know, what's going to go on for the day. And it could either be just our department or a multi-department, departmental meeting. And everybody kind of discuss, okay, this is the area that we're behind in. And we kind of discuss, what does it take? What will it take for us to complete? And it's done by task. So I will pick on a motor. So if you have a motor, and you know, which might runs a generator and stuff. So you have this motor / generator. You have your mechanical guys, the actual mechanics, millwrights and stuff like that, electrically. And the facilitator will be like, okay, what is it going to take for us to get this motor complete so that we can run it? And there might be all kinds of constraints. They might be missing some oil, you know, they might need lube oil to put in it. And, you know, that might be on backfill, you know, back shipment. It might be something electrical. The electricians might not be finished, you know, connecting their wires or whatever, or there was damage to the wire because of such and such. And so we sit back and we say, okay, what's it going to take to finish this? And it's also our plan, like I said, the plan of the day, because on the electrical side, there we might have realistically 20 to 100 different tasks for that day or for that week.
Wow.
All right. So you start out.
That's the kind of stuff with the meeting.
So in the morning, you start out with your status meeting and you pretty much look at your schedule. And this is very normal, I would say, for project work, especially when you're working on teams. It's very helpful and beneficial to start off with a status meeting and then getting everybody on the same page with, hey, this is what we need to accomplish for today. So that sounds about right to me for projects.
Right. So, and then I'm usually assigned like an area, you know, we're assigned areas, and I'll meet with my foreman, you know, with the foreman and supervisors, and follow up from the day before, you know, say, hey, did we complete this from yesterday? Or it may be, did we complete this from yesterday? And what, you know, what are we, where are we going for today? you know, are you going to have this cable pulled in, you know, to this device or this panel? You know, you're going to have that for me today? And he'll say, you know, yeah, da 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 da. If he says no, you know, what's holding you up? You know, he might say manpower. You know, I might have X amount of my guys sick today. And so I was like, all right, well, if you got that sick, you know, rearrange your people and we'll do this. Or is there anything else you can work on for today? So I'll go through that with him. I'll also walk around and do a miniature inspection, make sure that everything is, you know, everything is good to go. Is the conduit level, is anything going to be in the way? Is it the pretty much the right height? Now, here's the funny thing. I mentioned I'm a chemical engineer, but you notice I do a lot of electrical.
Yeah, that's
what I'm hearing.
Yeah,
exactly. So yes, I have like crossed over because with the instrumentation. So the instrument, the chemical and the way the process runs, that's what got me into the chemical. But in order to get the plant to run, you need the electrical. So I leaned into electrical and like DCS systems, PLCs, and DCS are distributed control systems. PLCs are programmable logic. So anyway, I've got into those, and by getting into those, that swung me into more of the electrical field.
So was that a difficult transition for you, even though you were, you know, you're trained, your background was in chemistry, like kind of learning electrical kind of, you know, on the fly, on the job, so to speak? Was that challenging for you?
No, not really, because I was an electrician before.
Yeah, I started out.
So that's what, you know, that got noted on my resume. And plus the experience that I had in the field, because I had, as an electrician, I had... roughly about 10 years of being an electrician and apprentice. And so that field knowledge, and that's what happened. So my first job, it was a desk job for about 4 months. And they're like, wow, you've been in the field before. So that's a good field engineer. Because most people come out of college and they stay, you know, pretty much the shirt and tie kind of thing in an office. And it's like, well, hey, you know, hey, you used to being out there. And so that's where I'm at. I'm in the right in the middle of the battle. So I like it.
I got a question for you, Larry, about those status meetings. So, you know, on a podcast, we like to keep it real about whatever it is we feel. Sometimes some of the stuff we say. So do you ever have any times where you like feel really stressed in your status meeting? Maybe you feel like, hey, this is impossible to get done. Like, can you maybe tell us or share like how it is when you have to like deliver some of that information to the foreman or the project manager?
So in those cases, sometimes my professionalism, my Marine comes out at me. Sometimes my Marine comes out at me. When you sit in a room like that, everybody has different ideas on how something should be run. If there's 10 people in the room, you're going to have probably about 15 different ideas.
And the way
something should be run. So it's whoever delivers it the loudest or delivers it with the most backup information. You know, and everybody's like, okay, yeah, that's good. But so sometimes to get my point across, I'll raise my voice and, you know, I say, no, we're going to do it this way. And of course, you know, some of the adjectives and pronouns and other things come out. and it's the same way with, so I'm generally easygoing, you know, with my guys in the field. But if they're not, because if I'm getting hammered, you know, say, hey, why isn't this, you know, it's because somebody above, we all have bosses, right?
Yeah.
So if my boss is like, hey, why isn't this getting done? Why is it getting done? And so I go to find the answer and I'm asking them, why isn't this getting done? And if I get a lot of, well, I get a lot of excuses, then it's like, uh-uh, we're not doing this.
Yeah.
So sometimes, I have to bear down. So,
all right.
Yeah. So that's generally my day. And you know, I might go back to the office, you know, especially if it's too hot or too cold outside. I'll go back inside for a little while. But I also regroup my notes, you know, what I saw, because I might have a mid-afternoon, like a meeting after lunch, you know, in which we sit down and say, okay, what did you do this morning? What was this morning's progress? And so that may be the afternoon meeting or a mid-meeting. depending on the client, you know, how they do business. And so I'll deliver that, and some of the statuses might have changed. They say, hey, look, let's go this direction. So then I go out in the field and I tell those guys, let's do it this way.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah. And then there's an end of the day meeting, generally an end of the day. And we, you know, just culminate everything that we've done for the day and sometimes prep for tomorrow, you know, from that. If there's a night shift involved, then we do a handshake with the night shift and tell them what we did today. And it's like, hey, can you continue on this path?
Yeah. So you're like passing the baton to the night crew.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
I've been on night crew. There was one client, we did the firm that I was with, they did an annual upgrade, an annual turnaround, and always got invited back to that annual turnaround. One of their resident engineers always wanted me on night shift. Always got volunteered for night shift, and it's like, wow. Yeah. But I didn't mind it.
You know? Okay. So I got a question for you that you mentioned, like when you were in school, how you took notes differently, right? And you also mentioned like just a little while ago, how you'll be taking notes kind of throughout the day or whatever to help, you know, as you're going into different meetings and stuff like that with whatever information that you kind of need to share. I think this is actually a pretty important point, because it's actually something that I've really learned. And as far as I can think of, every senior engineer that I've ever spoken with has always had their own, you know, their own Bible, so to speak, right? That they have kind of taken whatever notes, the things that they've learned. And it's not like it's like old, you know what I mean? Like it's got the leather straps on it and the pages that are halfway brown and yellow. Like it's one of those types of things where you've literally gone through and like wrote down whatever these key things are that you're kind of picking up along the way. Mm-hmm. And that becomes something that is almost invaluable to you, like as you progress throughout your career. So I want you to kind of talk about kind of how yours came together and how that became important to you. Because I think, especially as younger engineers, at least for myself, I was like, oh, I remember it. It's fine. You know what I'm saying? Like I got this brain up here, it can take down anything, right? So I would always think it's in my head. Uh-huh. And then eventually I come to that point where I'm like, oh, I know it's in there somewhere, but I can't remember. But had I written it down, I would at least have something to go back and reference.
Right. And in school, Drew, that's what I was competing against. So in my journal is pretty much continuous, I guess I would say. I keep a little notepad. So behind my pocket protector, which I do have a pocket protector.
All right now.
Yeah. So behind my pocket protector is a tiny notebook, and that I jot notes and thoughts and different things in that. Mm-hmm. And I actually keep them. I've got a small stack of them. But like you were mentioning, Tori, I believe you said you were talking about, you know, keeping a journal and referring back to, you know, back to it. And sometimes I do, because there's certain, like I said, notes that I scribble and things that I may draw out. But yeah, that's right.
Okay. So your note taking is continuous. And I can say when I was more of a project engineer and like in the facility more so, I did take a lot of notes, because I feel like I would, with everything that goes through my mind, I don't know if you guys are like this too, but I would never be able to keep it straight if I didn't write things down. Right, like that's always been important for me.
Right. And I also have a special laptop. And on that laptop, I store files, a lot of files on it. And so that as well. And that kind of takes me a little bit away from the paper. But yeah. And it's also manuals, you know, handy manuals on that. So I can automatically, you know, pull up a manual if I need to quickly read something about a certain device or product. Yeah. So, but yeah, but like I said, during my week, you know, like I said, chronicling with this journal, using this journal, you know, every day I was going through and, you know, documenting like what I did and thought about what I was doing on average. Mm-hmm. And I came across, like, so everybody talks about like Wednesday being hump day. And for me, that doesn't really apply because I work 6 or 7 days a week.
Yeah.
Wow. So Wednesdays are, you know, it's like, it's not really hump day. My hump day is really sort of almost like Thursday is like a hump day for me. My time scale is off. It's always off. Fridays for me are like Mondays because a lot of people want to get things done on the project before the weekend because a lot of the heavy people, the big shots, all of the upper management, they're off on the weekends. So they push everything. So Friday at 5, you know, you might get dumped on a lot of stuff Friday at 5.
So
that's a real hectic day for me. And then Saturdays and Sundays are a little more relaxed because some of the craftspeople sort of peel away and I've got more time to be out in the field without all of the traffic because being in an industrial setting is actually really dangerous. You got forklifts and all kinds of other machinery, you know, going around and people lifting things with cranes over your head, tripping hazards from things left, you know, there's all kinds of hazards and stuff like that. So on the weekends, if you take away that traffic, if you got, you know, only 1,000 people on site versus 3,000, that makes a difference. And then on Sundays, it's really smaller and you know, you just might have a few hundred and it seems like a ghost town. Believe it or not, 200 people seems like a ghost town.
Wow, so, that's a huge project if 200 people seems like a ghost town.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of them are in, like you were talking earlier, millions. Tori, those numbers are actually now in the billions. They're billion-dollar projects now.
I definitely could imagine. Now, Larry, I have a question. So since you work 7 days a week, I know your week looks different than most people that work 5 days a week. Mm-hmm. So your Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, so the first few days of your week, what would you say were your biggest accomplishments throughout those 3 days? So those days running into each other, what were some of the biggest things that you accomplished in your first few days of journaling?
Some of the things, so a lot of my accomplishments was, so as the project rolls on, I met milestones, you know, just different. You remember me mentioning a skyline. So there are certain dates, you got completion dates. Just meeting those completions, like really focus with the team. If I can put that right, was just being able to focus with the team and getting them.
Go ahead, Tori. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say that's
coming off the weekend. Yeah, it's kind of hard to describe without telling too much. Too much about what's going on.
Right.
But in general, you know, after a weekend of of downtime of being off, then coming back Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, to start that back up again and start up the week once more. So
And I definitely can appreciate the response of meeting milestones, because when any of us have worked on a project, the ideal of meeting milestones throughout your week, that's big. I mean, that's a big part of the whole plan that helps to move the project forward. So you were able to hit some of your milestones throughout your week of journaling. So definitely kudos to you.
Yes. So I got a question for you too, Larry. Did anything in the week kind of jump out at you that kind of surprised you, that like maybe you didn't realize that you did so much, or that certain tasks you didn't realize that that you kind of had to focus on those areas kind of throughout the week? You kind of mentioned early on that you just kind of do it, right? It's kind of ingrained in you. It's a part of your regular routine. So sometimes we kind of lose sight of just, man, I didn't realize that I did all of this stuff in a day, in a week, or whatever. Was there anything that kind of jumped out at you during your process?
Yes, it did. So my team, we had a valve that was giving us some problems. It wasn't communicating. We had problems communicating with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did a little bit of extra work, did some think tanking, and we got it to actually work and act right. So that was a major act, because the client gave us an attaboy because they couldn't figure it out as well.
Yeah.
And that was a big, the kudos, pat on the back, and they're like, wow, that's what, we're glad to have you here.
Yeah.
And things like that, because like I said, these major companies, all companies, have world-class engineers like you two.
Thank you, Larry.
Thank you.
And sometimes the client needs help because they only see things the way their company runs it.
Yeah.
And people like me come in and give them that third eye, that other perspective on stuff. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I kind of get that pat on the back sort of regular. So that's why I was hard. That's why my answers are crazy, because it's hard to pinpoint one particular. Yeah.
Yeah. Now let me ask you this, Larry, because I can identify with going into a company and being an outsider, because I'm an independent contractor as well. I don't work on projects as long as like the duration of yours, just because it's not my preference to do so. But do you feel being an outsider, your opinion is more welcomed by like upper management, and not only upper management, but you know, some of the operators that you may run into? Do you feel like they respect your opinion, or do you have any difficulties, like, you know, with them warming up to you or just questioning your expertise? How does that happen for you typically?
Plus and minus, first impressions. So anybody, once again, talking to the younger crowd wanting to come into this, first impressions.
Mm-hmm.
They might have seen my resume, because we have to submit resumes, you mm-hmm. know, to get us up these projects. They might have seen my resume. They might have heard of me, you know, because you hear of people.
Yeah.
But that the first handshake, the first everything, eye contact, the first things that come out of your mouth. Yeah, when you hit that first impression, that's huge. That's mm-hmm. really huge. And so, to answer your question, yeah, I would say it would be.
What would you say is the mess? Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh yeah, yeah. So you either get accepted, or it's a killer, and the rest of that project will go downhill for you.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I like that. That makes sense. That first impression, you make sure that you give, like, you're able to just come across as someone that's very knowledgeable, or else it could like kind of tank the rest of the duration of you being on that project.
Exactly. And some of them, you know, they'll say, they'll ask me like, how would you solve this problem? They'll give you hypotheticals, or be an actor. Hey man, look, I got this problem. And I tell them, I say, time out. Because I don't have problems. I have opportunities.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So that's the thing I'll share with everybody. I don't have problems. I have opportunities. And those opportunities are opportunities to grow, and opportunities to expand, opportunities to learn, opportunities to improve. So yes, I don't have problems.
Ooh, I like that. I like that as a tagline. No problems, only opportunity.
Yeah, sounds like an episode title.
Yeah.
No, that's actually really good. And I think it kind of segues perfectly into the question that I wanted to ask you. I mean, with everything that you've kind of been exposed to and experienced in the industry, what have been some of your biggest takeaways, either from a particular project, or, you know, things that apply to your career, or even things that may apply to you, like personally, that you've just been able to learn that really kind of stuck with you and have helped you, you know, as you continue to grow and move forward in your career?
So takeaways, and I think that's why I like going to different projects, different places, bouncing mm-hmm. around. You know, and Tori, you asked me about how many do I do a year. I do, man, on average, I've done like sometimes five projects, you know, in a mm-hmm. single year. Mm-hmm. So with each of those takeaways, you know, some of the takeaways I grab, just working with different people.
Yeah.
Different thought processes. You know, I've adapted to that. I've different ways to troubleshoot, problem solve. Just all kinds of different tiny things I take from different, you know, from being with people. You mm-hmm. know, we learn from each other, right?
So absolutely.
So yeah. Interacting with other sure. humans, I take away some of their thoughts and habits. And you know, we all come from different schools. You know, your university taught you things that, you know, my university didn't, vice versa.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's a lot that I take away. I always walk away from a project with, you know, something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I bet.
Always.
Now I'm going to hit you with one more question, Larry. Now, you know, as a listener, we've talked a lot about crucial conversations. So we've talked a lot about that, reading that book. So I'm going to ask you, since you deal with a plethora of people day in and day out, project mm-hmm. to project, can you just kind of tell us about, maybe obviously you don't have to give any names or anything, but a crucial conversation that you had to have it was uncomfortable, but you were able, you felt better after having a conversation and how you, what you learned from it and how it helped you grow.
So I guess this is like the awkward AF.
Awkward AF.
Yeah. So, man, some of it is, would relate to, sometimes engineers can be childish, petty, you know, it could happen in maybe in other professions, but engineers, I think it's worse because of, you know, some of our, you know, anyway.
We think we're smart.
Exactly. Yeah. So one of them, there was some rumors and you get the he said, she said, and you just have to pull them to the side and say, hey, man, look, stop, you know, quit, you know, talking just junk.
Yeah.
You kind of have to have that with people. And so a lot of it's like, you know, what, like junior high type stuff. And it's like, we're adults. And when you pull somebody to the side and say, hey, you know, quit that. And it, and, you know, sometimes it's been directed towards me. Sometimes as a team leader, it's my obligation to, you know, pull two people to the side and say, hey, look, you guys need to stop this squabbling and things like that. But yeah, that's, yeah, I've had quite a few of those awkward,
awkward AF conversations.
Yeah, quite a few. And sometimes it's daily. Sometimes that stuff is daily. As a matter of fact, one day last week, we were standing around having a conversation and we were talking about Myrtle Beach. I'll go ahead and say, you know, and I was like, yeah, you know, I grew up near Myrtle Beach. And, you know, as a kid, we'd go there a couple of times. And this one guy's like, yeah, I went there last summer. And he told a story about something that happened in a hotel.
Ooh.
He forgot where we were at, and we were in an office, and one of the guys in his cubicle stood up and said, "Would you mind repositioning that conversation?"
Yeah,
and you know, he realized what he said, but it came out of his mouth so fast, you know, and so that was a very awkward moment for us because we're standing there, and we were embarrassed because of him.
Yeah.
And that was an awkward situation.
Yeah.
Sometimes leadership and management turns into like being a parent to people, especially that you're over.
Yeah.
But okay. All right, Larry. So what we typically do, as you know, at the end of all of our episodes, we like to leave our listeners with a little bit of inspiration. And it sounds like you have a lot of wisdom that you could impart on us. So we're going to ask you to leave us out on a little bit of a positive note and with some inspiration.
Absolutely.
Let's see if I would have some inspiration. Actually, so going from, even if it's your first project, or if you do like myself and go project to project, just don't be afraid to embrace the fear of the unknown, and don't be afraid to step out, you know, of your comfort zone. Because in this career, if you stay within your comfort zone, that can almost be a career killer. I kind of did paper, like, for example, real fast, I did paper mills by accident. I had no clue. I had a headhunter that called me up and said, Larry, we got this paper mill. Man, I've never done a paper mill before. And he's like, oh, I think you can handle it. And I kind of doubted myself, and then I thought about it and I said, you know what? I'll do it. You know, screw it. And I did it, and I ended up doing about 10 in a row. So, you know, don't be afraid to step out, expand. And of course, another thing too, let's see, I was 45. I'm going to tell you my age again, Tori. So like being 45, 50 years old, and basically an engineer one, you know, entry level engineer, I was willing to do anything to, you know, to go into different disciplines to try to figure out where I wanted to settle down at. You know, so that's how I ended up in doing pharmaceutical and doing that food service and doing, you know, so I wanted to try to find my niche and see where I wanted to be. So, just don't be afraid. Jump out and do it. Grab it.
Oh, I love that. I think Drew, with all the books he reads, at some point we touch on the idea of just being open, number one, to learn, and then just, you know, stepping outside of your comfort zone. Those are anything that's uncomfortable, will help us to grow. Like, that's what helps us to grow. So thank you so much, Larry, for sharing that.
Absolutely.
If anyone wants to get in touch with you, so one of the things that we definitely want to do for those we have on for these Day in the Life episodes, we want to give listeners the opportunity to ask questions if they need to, because hey, maybe someone's interested in going into your field and maybe they want to ask you more questions. Mm-hmm. As a project engineer, chemical engineer. So could you just give your email address, and we'll also post it, but just kind of, if you could just, it's not anything too complicated to say.
Okay. It's GatorGriffin08@yahoo.com.
That's pretty easy. Gator Griffin.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. I know you love those gators.
Go Tigers. Get out of here. Time to close this episode. Thank you, guys. Thank you, guys, for listening.
And you can also find me on LinkedIn. LinkedIn's probably the, that's my greatest resource for finding people. So,
amen.
And for them finding me. So please inbox me on LinkedIn. I've got two or three people already who have, matter of fact, I'd like to thank y'all, because when you gave me that shout out, Drew, I grew two younger college students who reached
awesome.
Out to me on LinkedIn.
Oh, hey, so awesome.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
And I want to thank y'all for inviting me here. And this was an awesome experience. I loved it. I'm loving it. Thank you.
Thank you for gracing us with your presence on the podcast. Absolutely. We'll drop your LinkedIn, and thank you guys for listening, and we will talk to you next time.
Peace.